Turn to 2 Kings chapter 4. 2 Kings chapter 4. And we're going to look at the first seven verses tonight. We're going to continue our study on Elisha. We've kind of talked about Elijah. We'll bring him back in later in the series here. But 2 Kings chapter 4 tonight, we'll talk about Elisha. And this is, I think, going to be interesting to you and a help to you, as well as I think something practical. 2 Kings chapter 4, let's start reading in verse number 1. Now there cried a certain woman of the wives of the sons of prophets unto Elisha, saying, Thy servant, my husband, is dead. And thou knowest that thy servant did fear the Lord. And the creditor is come to take unto him my two sons to be bondmen. And Elisha said unto her, What shall I do for thee? Tell me, what hast thou in thine house? And she said, Thine handmaid hath not anything in the house save a pot of oil. Then he said, Go borrow these vessels abroad of all thy neighbors, even empty vessels. Borrow not a few. When thou art come in, thou shalt shut the door upon thee and upon thy sons, and thou shalt pour out in all those vessels, and thou shalt set aside that which is full. So she went from him and shut the door and upon her and her sons, who brought the vessels to her, and she poured out. It came to pass, when the vessels were full, that she said unto her son, Bring me yet a vessel. And he said unto her, There is not a vessel more. And the oil stayed. Then she came and told the man of God, and he said, Go, sell the oil, pay thy debt, and live thou and thy children of the rest. Now, Elisha has just gotten home after seeing God defeat the Moabites, as we talked about last week, if you remember, in a miraculous fashion. A widow comes to him. By the way, this is not an elderly widow. This is a younger lady. She still has two sons living at home. Probably a lady in her 30s, maybe 40s at the oldest. And she says, Sir, she says, My husband has died. You have to understand something. Notice verse number 1. Now there cried a certain woman of the wives of the sons of the prophets unto Elisha. This is a preacher boy and a preacher's wife. And she said, Sir, my husband, thy servant, one of the preachers, has died. And she said, Unfortunately, he's left debt behind, and there's so much debt I can't pay it. And the creditors are coming to take my two boys, and they're going to have to be bondmen. They're going to have to work off the debt. Imagine this sweet widow not only having her husband die, but she faces the pressure to be mom and dad of two sons, trying to pay all the bills. Add to that the pile of debt her husband had, and now the creditors want to come and take her children just to pay it off. Could you see how upset she might be here in 2 Kings chapter 4? We read it so passively. I don't think she came to Elisha passively. Can you see how desperate she would be? Elisha wants to help her. He asks her a question. He says, What do you have in your house of value? Look at verse number 2. And Elisha said unto her, What shall I do for thee? Tell me what thou hast in thine house. Now look at me. He said, I don't have the money to pay the debt. What do you have in your house that's worth anything? You know, sell his hunting rifles. Right now, sell his ammo. It was one of those things. What do you have that you could use to help? Now watch this. She said, I don't have anything but a pot of oil. Now, listen to me very carefully here. Sometimes, and again, I don't put a lot of stock in reading the Greek and the Hebrew and all that kind of stuff. I've had two semesters of Greek. I knew a Hebrew or two in my life. I didn't take Hebrew language, but I have study helps in those things. They sometimes can shed a little bit of light, but that doesn't change the Bible. Now, listen to me very carefully on this. This term oil here doesn't mean cooking oil. This isn't the same kind of oil that you would use in your kitchen. That's common. That's what everybody had. It wasn't the cheap canola or olive oil or something like this. The term oil here, this pot of oil, literally was embalming oils. They were oils of perfume, so to speak. They would use them for perfumes as well as for not the actual embalming of the body, but they would coat a dead body in it to keep the smell of death down. So they were very strong, spiced, sweet-smelling type oils, maybe similar to what you would call essential oils or something like that. But they were often, and sometimes they were even mixed with things that it wasn't just an oil, it was a little bit thicker than regular oil so that it didn't break down over time. Mixed with waxes and different things to keep them from going rancid so quickly. They were very, very expensive. This is my opinion. Now, look at me very carefully on this. I won't fight you on this. Don't fight me on it. But I think I have the wherewithal to show you why I think what I think on this. This oil probably was the oils that were left from the death of her husband and taking care of her husband's body. It's the only thing she had left. Maybe she had purchased enough to take care of her body in the event of her death that her children had it and didn't have that on top of it. I don't know. I do know that it was that type of oil, though, that is being spoken of here. It was probably left from the burial of her husband, though. Now, listen to me very carefully here, and this is where the story will start making sense to you. Elisha tells this lady, he said, look, I got an idea. I want you and your sons to go borrow vessels. They can be full, they can be empty. Anybody that'll give you a jug, go get it. Get as many as you can. Don't borrow a few, borrow as many as you can. Clean them out. And what I want you to do is take your pot of oil and start putting oil into the other containers. And set aside the full ones and keep pouring out oil. Now watch this. The way it appears in the story, she and one of her boys, they went out and got a bunch of them. One of the boys stayed home with mama pouring oil, and the other one was going back and forth getting jugs. And she had filled all of them that came to the house. And it's interesting, she said, well, son, I need you to go get more. The oil's still coming, go get more. And he said, Mom, there is none left. I've been to every house. I've been behind every garage. I've been in every barn. And everything that can be used, we've got it all. She said, all right. So she goes back to Elisha and says, you ain't going to believe what happened. I got a house full of pots of oil. And Elisha said, good. Now I want you to take all those, sell them, pay your debt off, and live off of the balance. We're talking lots of money. These were expensive oils. She had enough to live on the rest of her life, her and her boys, from the sale of that oil. Now, this little widow teaches in this story and Elisha and what God does some practical things here. And I want you just to listen. I want to kind of talk with you for a little bit as we teach tonight. Number one, a prophet's wife was left a mess by her husband's death. This lady was left in a mess because of her husband's death. Nobody knows when they're going to die. Let's face it, I was talking to Mrs. Lopez. She knows somebody she works with. A friend of theirs passed away this week suddenly, or last week, just with a heart attack. There again, not a week goes by I don't hear of somebody passing away. Not a week. And usually it's multiple times a week. We don't know when we're going to die. Well, shoot, I'm only 54. I got many years left, do I? I've preached funerals for a lot of people younger than me. I really have. So he didn't leave his wife and family prepared for death. Can I say something? We ought to work towards getting our estate and our things in at least a little bit of order in case something should happen. Men, I'm going to say something to you. You have an obligation to take care of your family whether you're alive or not. We have an obligation to care for our wife till death do us part. Yeah, but you ought not leave her paying all your bills after you die. We ought to be read up and ready. Take your Bible, turn to 2 Kings chapter 20. 2 Kings chapter 20. And I'm not going to belabor this point, but I'm going to say a few things here. 2 Kings chapter 20, look at verse number 1. 2 Kings chapter 20, verse number 1. In those days was Hezekiah sick unto death. And the prophet Isaiah, the son of Amoz, came to him and said unto him, Thus saith the Lord, watch this, set thine house in order, for thou shalt die and not live. Notice what God told him. You better get things ready because you're going to die and not live. You better get your house in order. Now, we could go to Isaiah 38 verses 1 through 5, tells the same story of Hezekiah from Isaiah, from the book of Isaiah. I'm going to make four or five practical suggestions here. Number one, have a will. Have a will. You don't have to go spend hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of dollars on a will, though you can, and there's nothing wrong with that. In the state of West Virginia, you can get a will done on your own, have it notarized, have it witnessed and notarized, and it's just as legal and binding. But it has to be through a certain form. We can help you with that. But I suggest you have some type of will. Say why? Because when you die, if not, Uncle Sam's going to take everything you have away from your family. Period. End of discussion. I'm just telling you, if the current administration gets what they want and they get this death tax passed, it's a mess. You'll pay 50 to 60% on inheritances. 50 to 60%. Now, there's ways around that. You say, well, preacher, I've got some investments. Good. See me, I can help you. There's things called TOD, transfer on death. You can do that with house titles. You can do it with investments where it's dispersed to whomever in your family that you want or to the church that way. And there's no taxes. It's just turned over immediately and goes into their names. And it's as though it's been theirs all along and it's not considered an inheritance at that point in time. They just maintain the tax load on it from the transfer of that. That's all that it is. But there's ways around those things, but you have to know a few things. Folks, I deal with death a lot. If you can, begin working on some cemetery and some end-of-life things. If you can do it pre-planned, what they call pre-planned, it's about 40% cheaper. Literally. Average cost to bury somebody in this area is about $8,000 to $10,000, just so you know. That's average. It's probably going to run you $12,000 to $15,000, though. And be careful of funeral homes. Please listen to your preacher. When the funeral director says, well, we could do this, every time he says, we can do this, you have to ask this question, how much is that? They'll make it sound like it's part of the package, and it's not. If you want to have viewing at the funeral home, it's going to cost you a couple thousand dollars. Folks, save yourself some money. Have your funeral here at the church. We won't charge you. And by the way, there's something special about having a funeral at a church. Amen. We're not going to charge anybody for that. They'll charge you another $1,000 just to have it there. They'll charge you to transfer the body each time. There's so many costs involved in that. There's only two things certain: death and taxes, and you're going to pay for both of them, just so you know. Begin getting some things in store and in ready. And I'm not saying you have to go out and pick cemetery plots this week. That's not what I'm talking about. But you can begin to do things. If you have some assets, and I'm not asking for the church, but there are people that they would like, when they die, to leave something to the church. You can have that put right into your will. It could be transferred without taxes, because the church is non-taxable. And it could be transferred immediately. There's a way to do that, and it's very simple to be done. I'm not asking you to do that, just so you know. We have a couple families in our church that have already done that. Great, no problem. And they've come to me. I did not go to them. I refuse to do that. There are things, though, that you can do like that. Next, have low debt. The older you get, the less debt you should have. The older you get, the less debt you should have. By the time you hit my age, you ought to be approaching, the only thing you have is your house mortgage. You ought to be down to a house and or a car, and that's about it. Get that debt in order. That way, if you pass away, your wife and family can care for themselves with what you do have. I think it's wise to have some life insurance. Okay? I will tell you this. I think whole life insurance is not a good deal. Term insurance is always better. You can argue with me. You disagree. Well, my whole life is an investment. I've dealt with that enough to know that's not always true. It's very rarely true. I know how those policies work. So be careful. I'm not saying that if you have a whole life policy that you're in trouble and it's all bad. Number one, depends how long you've been paying on it. But if you're getting it, I think term is better. You're better off saving the money that you would pay on term and put it in investments and savings and build up your savings so that as you get older, you have less insurance and more in savings. That's a better plan for you in the long run. Then don't leave your family so strapped in debt that if you died, they have to go to the poorhouse. Everybody doing okay? I just feel like that's the best way to say it. Here's a lady who is going to lose her kids to pay off the debt. That's pretty serious. And I'm going to get somebody mad, but here we go. It's very wise in your family and in your home, especially the older you get, you better keep your debts and your bills in both people's names. If you have a car and it's only in your name and you die, it doesn't matter what your will says. That title says you, and your wife is going to have to go through probate to get that vehicle in her name. And you're going to put her through 6 months of legal wrangling just to get that vehicle. I know what I'm talking about. I've dealt with this. There was part of somebody's estate that I helped them with in recent years. And that person actually had to go to the fiduciary and become a fiduciary for their dead spouse's account and go through 6 months of legal wrangling before they could ever even settle it. Four trips back and forth to the county to make sure that it was done. Four or five trips. It gets very complex. And at a time when people have lost someone they love, they really don't want to go through all that mess. So be cautious. Be wise. Set your house in order. Get things ready. I'm not saying that you ought to plan on dying anytime soon. You say, well, bless God, I'm waiting on the rapture. We all are, but you better make plans just in case. All right? I know people 50 years ago that were planning on the rapture. They didn't make it. All right? They're already in heaven. So I think those are some practical things. You need to realize this poor little widow, she was in a mess. I was glad when I sat down. It's hard to believe it's been 4 years already that Brother Rick Walter passed away. It'll be 4 years coming up. If you remember, Brother Rick Walter, a pastor friend of mine up in Maine, passed away. I flew to Maine to be there and help the church. I sat down at the kitchen table with their assistant pastor, who is now the pastor, and Rick's widow, his wife, and I think he had 5 or 6 kids, 5 still at home, I think. And I sat down across the table from Jenny, and I said, Jenny, I said, this is not going to be fun, but we got to crash through this. She said, I know, preacher. She said, Rick told me that you would come and help me with this. I said, you're right. I said, I promise you, I'll take care of you as though you were my own family. And I said, first of all, did Rick leave you with any insurance? She said, he did. I said, let me see it. I looked at it, and thank God he had purchased a pretty healthy life insurance policy. And I went, whew. I said, did Rick leave you any instructions? She said, he wants me to leave here, go move to Lexington, and be under Brother Fugit. He felt like that was best for me and the kids to get away from here. It'd be best for the church and us. It'd be too hard for us to be here. And I said, all right. I picked up my phone, sitting at the table, and I called Brother Fugit. I texted him. I said, are you available? I'm dealing with Jennifer Walters. I said, can I talk to you? He said, yes. I said, when? He said, call now. I called him. I said, look, these were Rick's desires. I said, is it okay if I give Mrs. Walter your phone number and have her call you in the next couple days? You begin to work out her coming there. I said, Rick has left her with enough to be able to take care of getting housing. And he and I talked very frankly for about 10 or 15 minutes. I hung up. I went back to the table and began to talk to Jennifer again. He had been in the military. We were checking through military things. I went through a lot of things with her. I said something to her that you might think is cruel. You might think is you would disagree with me on this, but you can disagree with me, but I'll give you her phone number and she'll tell you that Brother Bush was right. I told her that she ought to tithe on her life insurance. And it was pretty healthy. She looked at me, she said, I'd already planned to do that, preacher. I said, I just want to make sure. I said, I want God to bless you. By the way, she's purchased a home since she's been to Lexington. She's doing well. She's working because she wants to, not because she has to. I put her in touch with a financial planner that I know personally who is taking care of her, will take care of her the rest of her life. She's literally living off the interest of what she was left. And she said to me when I saw her in Kentucky just a week ago, she said, preacher, thank you. She said, I really believe because you were there, this has been so much easier and better for my family. She said, but I know the advice you gave me. She said, there's a lot of people afraid to tell a widow that they ought to tithe off of their insurance, but I'm going to tell you something. She said, that's what's kept me going. She said, God's been able to bless us because of it. She's had 3 kids married since then. She's got grandkids now. And she got 1 grandkid named after her husband, little Ricky III. And he is like his grandpa. He is trouble. I mean, he's a mess. Can I tell you something? I think that we ought to do our best to plan for if something happens. Number 2. Are you glad we're leaving that topic? Here we go. Number 2. The widow had to be willing to use the most precious thing she had for God to work. Look at, you realize that that oil was probably the only thing she had of value, and it reminded her every time she smelled it of her husband. She had to be willing to use that. Now, she had used up all other assets. There comes a point in time when sentimentality has to be put aside and practicality has to begin. Now, I'm not for getting rid of everything you own. Trust me. Now, in Brother Fred's case, we got rid of a lot of it because he didn't even know what he owned. But we've joked with Miss Wally. By the way, she's doing well. She's helping with her cousin's estate, and there's a big family estate involved in all this, and that's why she's there, and she could be gone several more weeks or a month or more. So hang in there. She's doing all right. We've talked with her, all right? But she had used up anything of value that she had. The only thing she had left of value is that oil. Now, watch this. When we give God our little, he can turn it into much. When we are willing to give up that which we have of little, the only thing valuable we have, God can turn it into something pretty big. I'm gonna say it this way. That includes your children. When you're willing to give them up and give them to God, God can bring a pretty big return on your investment. I promise you. God did not give you your children to keep. They're his, not yours. Do you know they're going to be out of your house longer than they're in your house? You better train them to be out of your house. If you'll learn to train them to learn to take care of their mother while you're there, they'll take care of your mother when you're not there. Their mother, not your mother. You know, what's the old adage? Be good to your kids today because tomorrow they pick your nursing home. One of those kind of deals, you know. boy, am I in trouble. Yeah, buddy. That oil was very expensive. It was that infused, scented oil. And it's all she had left. By the way, it was a memory of her husband. She may not have wanted to use it. But can I tell you something? Look what happened when she did use it. When she did use it, God used it to take care of her for the rest of her life. That thing that seems to be most precious, you may need to let God have it and watch what he can do with it. I've got to hurry. I've got two more things I want to cover here. Number three, look at the widow's obedience. Look at verse number 5. So she went from him and shut the door upon her and upon her sons, who brought the vessels to her, and she poured out. Brother Scott, don't find one time in here where she looked at the man of God and said, but I don't want to do that. I don't know if I can do that. I don't find one time where she said, well, why do I got to do that? Everybody look at me for just a moment. And this is sensitive in my family because we've just gone through a death in the last year. Can I tell you something? Don't question the man of God at a time when your decision maker is broken. You have to sometimes let somebody that has a good decision maker make decisions, because you got to realize at that point in time, you're not making good decisions. When dad was down sick and mom was down sick, dad said, you make the decisions. You and your brother talk about it. You make the decisions. I'm not well enough to make decisions. Now, we ran it all by him. But I made every phone call. I made sure that my daddy didn't have to make the phone calls and get the phone calls from the doctors and the nurses. I got them. He needed time to heal. He put that on me. By the way, what an honor. I did not look at that as a bad thing. That was an honor for me to take care of my mom and my dad. But watch this. Make sure that when you're going through those times, you let somebody that doesn't have the sentimentality and the investment in that at stake there, you're not making good decisions after you've gone through the death of somebody. You're not. I've watched people make some really bad mistakes. When I checked with Jenny Walter, I said, Jenny, you need to use this much. She said, well, preacher, I want to do one more thing other than our move. She told me what it was. And one of her children was supposed to get married when Rick got sick. They delayed their wedding a year so that they could help take care of Dad and Mom. That young man stayed out of college for a year to take care of his mom and dad. And she said, Brother Bush, I feel like I owe it to my son and my future daughter-in-law to pay for at least a year of his college and pay for their wedding, and I'd like to give this much. I said, do it. I think you're right. So she took another small portion of that big lump, did that, and everything else she's living off of. She didn't go out and buy new cars. She didn't go out and buy a Lamborghini. She didn't need it. Packing 5 kids in a Lamborghini wasn't going to do it. You don't have to live extravagantly, but she got what she needed. And she's doing well. She still doesn't live fancy, but she's living comfortable. Now, can I tell you something? I really believe that her obedience, this widow's obedience, without question, is what got her through this. Now watch this. She began to obey immediately, but she also got her boys involved in obeying immediately. When your family goes through tough times, keep them obeying God. And please forgive me if you've said this. I don't remember you saying it, but I've heard it hundreds of times, thousands of times. Well, after a death, the hardest place to go is church. God forbid, that ought to be the best and easiest place to go. I don't get that. I'm sorry. I don't see that as being the hardest place to go. I see that as being the easiest place to go. Keep your family doing that which is right. By the way, these boys had to make many, 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 many trips getting jugs, pots, pans, jars, whatever they could find, they were getting. Can I tell you something? They were actively involved doing all they could do. Remember the sermon I preached Sunday morning? Ask, seek, and knock. They were asking, seeking, and knocking. And look at the miracle God did in answer to their prayers. You see... matter of fact, the widow was having fun filling the vessel so much that when she was out of jugs, she said, go get some more. And they said, there's not another one to be found, Mom. She said, but it's still pouring. Go get me some more. She was having fun. In and amongst all of the sadness and the pressure and the grief, getting back into schedule, working, getting busy, got her through the pressure and the grief and the pain. Get back into schedule as soon as you can. What happened after that? I love this. Look at verse number 7. Then she came and told the man of God. After she did all she could, the first thing she did is went and told the preacher. And I know my reactions may not always be as you plan, but to me, look at Elisha's reaction. He said, go, sell the oil, pay thy debt, live thou and thy children of the rest. Does it sound like Elisha was surprised? Sound like he expected God to do something, doesn't it? He was not surprised. He told her to sell all she had, and the oil would not only pay the debt, but it would be enough for her to live on and the boys for the rest of her life. Now, he didn't tell her to price gouge. He told her just sell it, get it over with, get it out of here, sell everything you can, make as much money as you can, but don't gouge anybody, and go on. Now, not only did they have to go get vessels, clean them, fill them, but now they had to go sell. He was keeping them busy. They were busy beavers. But she got her debt paid. Number four, and I'm done. This is just a novelty, but something that I find interesting. I see a common theme in Elijah and Elisha's miracles that God worked through them. Remember, the first miracle of Elisha was the last miracle of Elijah. Elijah took his mantle, hit the water, and they crossed over Jordan River on dry ground. Well, when the mantle began to fall, Elisha picked it up. First thing he did was he came to the Jordan River. Where's the Lord God of Elijah? Took the mantle, struck the water, and guess what? He went over on dry ground. Do you remember another story of a lady that had a pot of oil and a little bit of meal? And the oil never ceased, and the meal ceased not till the drought was over with Elijah. Doesn't this kind of remind you of that one a little bit? Both of them had run-ins with Ahab's family. Elijah had it with Ahab and Jezebel. Elisha had it with Jehoram, Ahab's son. You'll notice throughout that Elijah's miracles and Elisha's miracles, they're not identical, but they're similar. They kind of run hand in hand. Why? I'm going to give you my opinion. It's based off of 41 years of preaching. It's based off of 32 years in the ministry. And it's based off of a lot of study in the Bible. And that's this: God doesn't change. God's not a respecter of persons, and he doesn't matter what your name is, your first name or your last name. It doesn't matter what generation in which you live. We still have the same God Elijah had. We still have the same God Elisha had. I have the same God Brother Hiles had. He had the same God that D.L. Moody had. I have the same God that Billy Sunday had. Guess what? God has not changed. And we need some men of God to quit saying, well, in today's society, we can't do that. Puke. That stuff makes me want to vomit. I'm sorry. Brother Bossy got an earful today when I talked to him. He said, Brother Bush, I just don't understand what these guys are doing. I said, I do. They're blaming culture, and they're trying to be culturally acceptable and not God acceptable. He said, you're a blessed man. You're a spoiled man, Brother Bush. I said, yes, sir. And it seems like the harder I work, the more spoiled I get. He said, that's the key right there. Most preachers aren't willing to put the work in. I said, well, the harder we work around here, the more spoiled we get. I said, isn't it amazing? The more doors we knock, the more people get saved. The more people get saved, the more people come to church. The more people come to church, the more people get baptized and join the church. And the more miracles happen around here. But it takes us getting off our blessed assurance and going out there and telling somebody about Jesus. Right. You see, God's not a respecter of persons. I loved Brother Hiles, but can I tell you something? I don't need Brother Hiles. I have the same God and same Holy Spirit and same Bible he had. I respect J. Frank Norris, but I never met J. Frank Norris. He died a long time before I was born. But I have the same God J. Frank Norris had. I knew Lester Roloff, Tom Malone. I knew Lee Robertson, Joe Boyd. You name them, I probably met them if they were alive from the 70s on. Now, can I tell you something? Though I loved and respected many of those men, they're dead, they're gone, but God didn't die and God's influence didn't die. The word of God lives and abides forever and ever. And I believe God used similar miracles in Elisha's life that were like Elijah's, especially at the beginning, to show everybody that, hey, the same God that was of Elijah is the same God on Elisha, and God can do it in this generation like he did in the previous generation. Grace Baptist Church, I believe our greatest days are ahead, not behind. I don't believe that we have to sit on our backsides doing nothing. Thank God that lady that called that church this week, she said, I'm tired of sitting at home and church on television and on the computer. I need a real church. Hoorah. Well, come to a real church. Folks, God didn't die. And God wants to show those things through us. Boy, seven little verses, but boy, are they power-packed. Every head bowed, every eye closed, I'm going to shut it down. I wonder, maybe you need to set some things in order. Maybe you need to get some things squared away. Maybe you just need to begin, and I'm not saying you got to have it all done before Sunday, but at least start working towards it. Maybe we need to get some things curbed and paid off so that if something did happen, God forbid,